Durban, South Africa, and New York, this is Democracy Now in Exile. At the UN World Conference Against Racism, senior diplomats charged that slavery and reparations, not Israel, is the real reason for the U.S. withdrawal. Also, Britain blocks a European Union apology for centuries of slavery. And India's Dalits, or untouchables, take their struggle to the World Conference Against Racism.
Dalits really mean a group of people has been subordinated, crushed, and broken. But we also said that while we are broken, we are not going to be silent, but we are going to really revolt against this oppression. So the Dalits means one side oppression, oppressed people, and the other side, they will not keep quiet, but reorganize ourselves.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. For the fourth time in less than 2 weeks, U.S. warplanes have bombed Iraq, firing at surface-to-air missile sites, anti-aircraft batteries, and radars in the northern and southern no-flight zones. In related news, the United States has approved Iraq's purchase of nearly $75 million worth of telecommunications equipment from the French company Alcatel to repair the country's battered public telephone network. For more than 2 years, the United States had prevented Iraq from obtaining advanced communications equipment because of concerns it could be used to upgrade weapon systems. But the U.S. dropped its opposition in the face of international pressure to demonstrate it's doing something to improve living standards for ordinary Iraqis. Six Southern African leaders, including President Thabo Mbeki of South Africa, will go to Zimbabwe on Monday for a two-day meeting to discuss Zimbabwe's land crisis. Aside from Mbeki, the leaders of Botswana, Mozambique, Malawi, Angola, and Namibia are scheduled to attend the talks with President Robert Mugabe. A former senior government lawyer yesterday vigorously disputed the Bush administration's assertion that the global treaty banning biological weapons permits nations to test such arms for defensive purposes. The lawyer, Mary Elizabeth Hanks, who was general counsel of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency from 1994 to 1999, said such an interpretation of the 1972 treaty is a gross misrepresentation that risks doing serious violence to an accord the United States claims it has long championed. The New York Times reported yesterday the United States had made and tested a model of a Soviet-designed biological bomb as part of a series of secret research projects that officials said were aimed at defending against a growing threat of a germ attack. A Pentagon spokesperson also confirmed yesterday the Defense Department has drawn up plans to produce small amounts of genetically modified anthrax. She said the Pentagon intends to press ahead with the anthrax project. A man who apparently was a Palestinian dressed like an ultra-Orthodox Jew blew himself up in central Jerusalem, injuring 20 people. It was the fifth bomb that exploded in Jerusalem in a little more than 24 hours. Yasser Arafat immediately said, quote, "We deplore any attacks that harm Israeli or Palestinian civilians, but the Israeli government insisted responsibility lay with the Palestinian leadership." As Israel tried to head off charges of racism in Durban, one of its senior police commanders tried to explain to a judicial inquiry in Jerusalem yesterday why his officers shot dead 13 Arabs who were Israeli citizens last October. In Jerusalem, liberal Israeli activists were condemning what they saw as a brazen example of their country's unfair treatment of a minority. They readily agreed their 53-year-old nation has racist characteristics. For Israel's Arabs, the findings of the commission will be a test of Israel's denials about being racist and its much-advertised commitment to pluralism and democracy. Yuri Avnari, a former parliamentarian who in 1975 was the first Israeli to open contact with the PLO, said, "I wouldn't say Israel is racist, and I certainly wouldn't say Zionism is racist, because it is a big movement with many components, but," he says, "Israel contains a lot of people who are racist." This national news, from Indiana. The president of the United Mine Workers of America and 11 other people were arrested for blocking a road in a protest outside a coal mine they're trying to unionize. The union president, Cecil Roberts, rallied with about 120 supporters at a park before heading to the mine, where he and 11 supporters were cited on a charge of failing to obey police orders and were then released. The union's trying to unionize more than a dozen Black Beauty mines in Indiana and Illinois. Black Beauty, based in Evansville, is Indiana's largest coal producer and the largest supplier of coal to the state's utility companies. And Mexico, President Bush is preparing to welcome Mexican President Vicente Fox to the White House today. The Mexican foreign minister said yesterday his country will continue to argue that a new U.S. immigration policy should include a plan for legalizing some of the undocumented immigrants now working in the United States. The White House announced last week that no agreement was expected, and Powell said the two countries have not yet begun to talk about specifics. Fox, who has made immigration reform a top priority, said in an interview on Monday he expects it will take 4 to 6 years to revamp U.S.-Mexican immigration policy. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is threatening to take over much of Ohio's air pollution control program after a lengthy review of the state's overall enforcement of environmental laws. This according to USA Today. The review made public yesterday found there's been a decline in recent years in air pollution investigations, inspections, and fines. The EPA has been reviewing Ohio's environmental program since January 2000 after four environmental groups petitioned the federal agency to look into the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency. President Bush's nominee for the EPA's top enforcement job, Donald Shrigartus, ran the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency during much of the period examined by the federal EPA review.
Because we know what's been done to us. But one day we'll stop pretending it's all right. One day Black people will learn to fight the real issues. Until we pray a righteous prayer, look for God and find him everywhere. We'll know judgment day has arrived when we look to the hills and the hills cry and the drum calls our name in the wind. No longer stumbling, no longer in sin, no time to be mild nor meek. We learned our lesson from men in white sheep. No, judgment day can't save you now. White men still in seats, Black people still bow down. Jesus we pray to, one day it'll be too late to shout and fall out in his holy name. Black people have learned the game. If the black truth be known, the milk of Mother Nature's breast would sound. Southern trees would devour the white man and stretch his neck from trees so tall. Not even birds that fly and soar way up high would care to visit him there. Southern trees.
Joliet Anderson at the End of a Rope in Mississippi. You're listening to Democracy Now in Exile, Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Senior diplomats at the UN World Conference Against Racism are charging that the U.S.'s withdrawal from the conference was prompted by its fear of facing massive reparations claims over the enslavement of African Americans and not, as it implied, by friction over the Middle East. We go right now to Durban, South Africa, where we'll spend the entire hour. We're joined by Chris McGreal, who is a reporter with the Guardian newspaper in Britain, speaking to us from Durban. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning.
Can you tell us, as we in the United States have been reporting of the U.S. pullout over the last few days of the World Conference, citing the way the statements have been written about Israel and the Palestinians. What is the discussion there about why the United States really pulled out?
Well, shortly after the United States and Israel announced their pullout, a minister in the president's office, Isop Pahad, in the South African president's office, issued a statement in which he implied that it was because the United States wanted to avoid discussion of other issues. That's been expanded on here by a number of people who say the U.S. has been avoiding having to apologize for slavery, recognize it as a crime against humanity, talking about reparations. A number of NGOs also feel, American NGOs, that the United States is trying to avoid public discussion of modern issues of racism within the U.S.
As a lot of the attention in the United States is focused on Israel and the U.S. pullout, the role of the European Union at the conference has been largely ignored. Can you talk about the British government's attempts to block the European Union statement that would formally apologize for slavery?
Well, the European Union is, in a way, now right at the heart of the upheaval at the conference, because the Zionism-Israel issue, to some degree, has been, although there's discussion about what the wording should be, has been put on the back burner, whilst the African bloc and the European Union try and come up with a common position on slavery, reparations, and colonialism. A few days ago, the European Union, 11 of the 15 members, were prepared to offer an apology, but a small group led by Britain, and including Holland, Spain and Portugal, refused to use the word apology. They wanted to say that they were regretful. Their argument was that apology had legal implications and could lead to claims for reparations, other legal actions against those governments. They were holding out under a lot of pressure from the other European nations, particularly Belgium and France, which were taking a more liberal position. However, since then, the African bloc has hardened its demands. It now wants a specific recognition of slavery and colonialism as crimes against humanity. It wants an explicit country-by-country apology from those countries within Europe that were responsible, and it wants reparations. The result of that is that many European countries now feel that they can't even begin to approach that. So they've sort of fallen back a bit now on the British position, and the European Union is less divided in the face of these harder African demands.
Can you talk about the African group meeting to deal with their demands, and the South African government minister who just came out of the meetings and held a news conference?
Yes, the African position was put together at a preparatory meeting in Dakar, Senegal, in February, and it was there that they laid down the demands for an apology by country, the recognition of slavery and colonialism as crimes against humanity, and the reparations question. That was softened over a number of months through negotiations in Geneva, led in particular by the South African government. And when the African bloc got to the meeting last week, it was thought that they would settle for a general apology from the Europeans rather than country by country, and that whilst there would be an offer of assistance to reconstruct, rebuild Africa, to help it, that wouldn't be specifically called reparations. But it seems that a number of things have pushed the Africans back to their hardline position, not least the United States position on Israel and Zionism. There's a strong feeling here amongst the Africans that the United States and Zionism, the issue of Zionism, effectively hijacked this conference, took it over, and distracted from the very real other issues, including Africa's problems. And there's a lot of anger about that. So that contributed to a hardening of the attitude here, led in particular by Nigeria. A South Africa's public works minister had a press conference this morning. She's in on the talks, and she indicated that there's really not much movement, not much giving by the African group now. She said that they're quite firm in their demand for apology. They're quite firm in wanting slavery and colonialism recognized as crimes against humanity. I think there'll be a bit more flexibility on the reparations, but particularly on the recognition of crimes against humanity, I think that would be too much for the European bloc. The EU has repeatedly said it will not admit to crimes against humanity.
We're talking to Chris McGreal, reporter with the British newspaper Guardian, speaking to us from Durban. On the issue of the United States, do you think they had any intention ever of staying or dealing with the issue of reparations?
Well, it's hard for me to get inside the mind of the State Department, but it has to be said that from the moment that they arrived, the U.S. delegation, official delegation arrived, it was focused very much on what kind of language would be used in the final declaration here about Israel, and it really talked about nothing else, and it was quite apparent that until that issue was resolved for them, they were not interested in talking about anything else. I think it's worth bearing in mind that before this conference began, when it was being debated whether Colin Powell would attend, when it was decided to pull him out, the Americans initially indicated that they weren't going to come at all. Then they decided they would send a lower-level delegation. And at that point, they specifically said it was to moderate the language on Israel. And I think that that really was all that they were interested in. They certainly haven't done anything to suggest they were interested in anything else.
Can you describe for us, Chris McGreal, what the scene is in Durban between the official UN World Conference Against Racism and the NGO activity that is going on there? We've spent a lot of time, and we'll spend the rest of the program with representatives of NGOs, one talking about racism, and then two talking about Dalits. There's a large Dalit or untouchable presence from India. But the separation between those two conferences?
Well, the NGOs held their conference beforehand at a neighboring cricket stadium, and then they've been really very visible, very around during this conference. A lot of them have accreditation as observers to this conference. They're in the corridors. They attend some of the meetings. They talk to the delegates. So they are very visible and are making their voice heard. Having said that, I think that people, groups like the Dalits, you know, which on Indian casteism, the system of casteism, affects, I gather, 250 million people around the world, they feel that although they're able to make their voice heard, it's really not having the kind of influence they would like it to have on this conference. And I think a lot of NGOs feel that here, they're sort of present, but they're not necessarily participants.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson is saying Britain should apologize for its role in the slave trade, suggesting that compensation could be paid to African countries in the shape of reducing national debts. He said slavery could not be dismissed as if it never happened. What kind of play does this kind of opinion get in Britain? What discussion is going on now in your country?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. I wrote an article a few days ago, an opinion page piece in my newspaper, in which I argued that slavery really wasn't just a historic issue, that there's a direct line from slavery through colonialism, through the huge abuses that went on this continent, in Africa during the Cold War, how Angola, for instance, was used as a battleground, an ideological battleground by the West and the Soviet Union, and hundreds of thousands of people died. And that continued right up to issues such as very topical issue about American inaction during the Rwandan genocide. Slavery led to this attitude towards Africa and Africans that has contributed to a lot of the problems that this continent has. And I argued that, in fact, that it was a very much a live and present-day issue, and that we should actually pay reparations through supporting the new African Initiative, as it's called, a sort of Marshall Plan for Africa. And I got a lot of response to that. Mine is a relatively liberal newspaper, and most of the response I got was negative. It was rather cliched in a way, emails and letters saying, why if Britain has to pay reparations, shouldn't Britain turn around to the Romans, for instance, and demand reparations for the Roman occupation of Britain? And I think there's a very deep misunderstanding in the West of the effect of slavery on this continent, not just at what happened at the time, but the legacy of it and what it led to through many centuries following slavery. Slavery was the beginning of something that we're still living with in Africa.
Finally, Chris McGreal, the United States has pulled out, but they have left one person as a delegate, though apparently he's just going to be communicating on language of a final statement by telephone. What is this about? Is this a complete withdrawal? Why is this person left?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think that most people here would consider, for all intents and purposes, the Americans are now boycotting this conference. I mean, one man is left. He's actually a diplomat at the American Consulate General in Durban, so he's just a local official that's based here. The most cynical view I've heard is that he's here to keep an eye on the Congressional Black Caucus, which has been very vigorous and very active in backing the African bloc's demands for reparations and recognition of slavery as a crime against humanity. And I think that perhaps he hopes to have some influence over the kind of language that goes into the final declaration. But I don't think that anybody really thinks that he's a participant or a player.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Chris McGreal, speaking to us from Durban, South Africa, reporter with The Guardian newspaper in Britain. You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile. When we return, we'll speak with non-governmental organization representatives about the issue of reparations in the United States. And then we'll look at the massive problem of Dalits, or untouchables, in India. Stay with us.